You're listening to The Local Maximum, episode 189.
Time to expand your perspective. Welcome to The Local Maximum. Now, here's your host, Max Sklar.
Welcome, everyone. Welcome. You have reached another Local Maximum. Welcome to part two of our 9/11 episode. I almost said 9/11 special, but that just sounds so wrong.
It's a very special episode.
It is a special episode. And it's kind of a difficult episode to get through. And I think this second part is going to be even more difficult than the first. Although I think we're going to run through the actual 9/11 part of 9/11 pretty quickly and then get into some of the stories that I remember in the aftermath of 9/11, which I think are not as much not covered as much these days. It might not be covered in kind of retellings of the story, but are more related to my experiences in New York. Okay, so I don't know what you did in your family, but when we got up, first of all, it was like incredibly hard to get everyone up early in the morning for these schools. I don't know why they start at like 7-8 in the morning. Well, I know why, but it's like, it's not fun. So we always had like these early shows and Good Morning, not Good Morning New York, but like shows like that on in the morning during breakfast. And it was like, you know, Katie Couric and Matt Lauer were on. Matt Lauer doesn't do that anymore. that morning there was an early show. And if you watch some of these clips, it's pretty amazing how all of them are talking about frivolous things. Very light, very like, this is a perfect day. Very like, this is like a really nice summer September day. And there was one weather and traffic guy being like, you know, just a normal, September day. And I think the actual quote is, it's really quiet. We like it quiet, maybe too quiet. Back to you. That was the end of it.
Yeah.
So, and that was, as the first planes were being hijacked, crazy enough. So let's get back to that morning. We have you walking to what I believe is the North Cafeteria and me in the North Cafeteria when we find out. Now, back then, Weston actually had two cafeterias. They had a North Cafeteria and a South Cafeteria. And when they redesigned the schools, they were like, no, that's not diverse enough or not. No. They probably gave a reason for diversity.
Don't want a Hatfields and McCoy situation development.
Yeah. I don't remember it being that bad, but it was like notoriously.
I think there may have been a little bit of like, well, the jocks eat in this cafeteria.
Right.
And the South. Theater kids eat in this cafeteria.
South, the North. Right. So I was in the North for my free time. And so this happens. And all I heard was that a plane crashed into the World Trade Center. That's what someone said. The TV was not on. There was a TV in the North Cafeteria, but it wasn't on. I didn't know how to turn it on. I feel like the remote was like really high. I didn't want to reach it. I was probably doing homework. And I was like, all right, it didn't really feel like a big news story when I first heard it because, you know, there are plane crashes all the time. There's Flight 800. There's plane crashes. And I'm like, you know what? Nah, all right. I don't know what your first...
So I remember where I was standing. I was walking down the hall, you know, from the main entrance down that main corridor, you know, past the office, towards the T intersection with the by the cafeterias there.
Right.
And someone, I can't remember who, actually like ran by me and basically like threw the news at me as they were running by, and I can't remember
typical
how much the story was developed at that point. It was certainly before plane number two. So they couldn't have known that much. But I had been in the library for, you know, the last 30 minutes or so. So I almost certainly missed part of the development of the story, that it hadn't just happened, but it was I had been oblivious until that moment.
Yeah, and part of our story happens in the library because I'm sure as soon as you left, people started bringing up websites and stuff, whatever it is, like, you know, MSN News Network or whatever they had back then. I don't know what it was, but there are all sorts of websites you can go to, and right. But that first plane, it didn't feel like a world-changing event. It just felt like there was a
everyone was still assuming, well, this is a terrible accident.
Yeah, yeah. I don't remember where I was when they said, when I learned a second plane hit. I just don't remember. I think it could have been one of those things where it was literally between classes, not like you walking down the hall, but when they were like,
everybody's
walking down the hall. But I do remember the announcement that the principal made during, during math class, which was like the next period. I think the period right before lunch. Do you remember that?
No, that refreshed my memory.
So, I mean, I don't, you know, oftentimes I think I hear something recorded and then I listen to it and it sounds very different than what I remember. So this is 20 years of memory. But I remember her saying, like, you know, I know many of you have heard of the attacks on New York and Washington. And it was something like, I don't remember what she said next, but I remember using the word attack, even though I'd already known there was a second plane, was a little bit jarring to me because terrorist attack and attack sound very different. And I know that's weird. It's like, well, a terrorist attack sounds like a kind of attack, but attack, it was almost like the nation is under attack, versus a terrorist attack is more like, you know, the Oklahoma City bombing or something, you know, a terrible thing. Maybe it's the same thing, but it sounded less, I don't know. It sounded more official. And I almost, cause I hadn't seen the pictures yet. I almost thought, they might have been overreacting. So I don't know. And then of course there's obviously more to that announcement, but I don't remember what it was. It probably was saying like, maybe you can go home. Maybe you could use the phone. I don't remember at all what the second part of the announcement was.
Yeah, well, and some context there that we went to school in a small town in Connecticut, and it's perhaps an exaggeration to say that 50% of the households had someone who commuted into the city.
Yeah,
but a significant
portion.
Of the households in our hometown were people who worked, you know, rode the train into New York City, and you know, I'm racking my brain to remember if any of our classmates actually had parents who were in the towers. I can't recall.
I don't remember any.
I know I had a next door neighbor who used to work in the towers.
Yeah.
Who at that point was no longer doing so. But
I remember,
but
it there
would
was
not
someone
have been unusual to yeah. know somebody who did work in the World Trade Center.
I remember a parent who was saying I was supposed to be there that day. Lunchtime comes around. I don't know if you remember this, but I had lunch with you that day.
I do not. It's all a blur.
Okay. So this was, I remember where it was. I remember it was in the South cafeteria. Now, like you said, like the theater kids went to the North cafeteria, and was it the jocks went to the South cafeteria? So I was theater, so I usually went to North. But for some reason that day we were eating in South. I don't know why. But I definitely remember we were in South, because it wasn't that, it wasn't like you couldn't eat there. sometimes I eat in the South cafeteria. I don't know. Maybe it was like my class was there. I don't know. We were talking about it, but, I don't remember all the details of the conversation, but it was, I wish we had a recording of it. You republish it at this point.
Yeah, I do remember. I want to say
we didn't know who it was.
I remember Mr. Sidoli's class.
I remember speculating. I remember trying to speculate with you who it was. We had no idea. Like, who would do this? Was kind of the thing. So sorry. Go ahead. What was that class?
I remember. I want to say that we were in. I wouldn't have been taking a class. Was I taking a class with Mr. Sidoli at that point? Who was one of our history teachers?
I was too.
Okay.
But I don't know if it was the same class. Was it the Western Civ?
Would we have been taking that senior year? I think so. Yeah.
I was taking
it. So yeah, that
there might have been multiple ones.
And I'm pretty sure he either wheeled in, or I guess there probably wasn't a TV in the room, but I think he wheeled one, you know, wheeled in one off the AV card or whatever, and we were watching.
Because I was going to get into the science teachers, but that happened.
It's possible that I'm mixing up memories there, but for some reason in my brain, Mr. Sidoli was in the room there, and maybe he'd retreated to the science wing.
Gotcha. So right.
But there was definitely a acknowledgement from at least some of the teachers that we're not getting anything productive on the syllabus done today. This is something important, and we're going to watch this because I'm sure wanted to know what was going on just as much as we did, and it was a big deal.
And the administration didn't really want to. Didn't want us to do that. Like I remember, so people.
I'm sure they wanted to keep things as normal as possible.
Right. So first,
at that point, that ship had sailed.
So first, I heard that they cut the internet. It was like, what? They cut the internet? That was the first. I've never seen the internet cut before. Mm. It was so new. It's like this is. It's never been cut. It's gone out, but it's never been cut. Then in the afternoon, I had science class, and science was kind of in the back of the school, if we can explain it. And they set up the TV in the back room, like all the way, you know, basically if you walk out the door there, you're walking outside into the woods. And that back room was not where class was. They just brought all the science classes in there every period for the next thing. And so now even when I go into the school, even though it's completely renovated, when I go past that room, I'm like, that's the 9/11 room, because I didn't do anything else in that room the whole time we were in high school.
Yeah.
So it turned on, and I remember thinking, okay, like, so there's a plane crash. But I remember the first thing the news was, you know, saying, it's hard to believe, but this is New York. And I saw basically the entire downtown Manhattan covered in smoke. Like it, because the tower had fell, but it almost looked like, you know, the entire, all of lower Manhattan
was
rubble.
On fire.
Yeah. That's sort of what it looked like. And it was like, holy shit. And I feel like that is when people changed from like kids being all excited, sharing news to like, you know, this just got real. Yeah, I remember some people were crying, and you know, people were all of a sudden became very somber. Nobody was like at that point, like nobody was joking around about it once we saw it wasn't going on TV. And it took me a while to figure out that the whole tower had fell. I'll get into a little bit because I feel like that moment is probably the most dramatic moment of the whole day. That first tower falling
in particular because. The world was watching.
The world was watching. That's
a lot
probably
of people,
when most of the deaths happened.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that too. Well, I was thinking of when the second plane hit. Everyone was, you know, all the news cameras and everything were already tuned in on it, and they saw that actually happen, and that's when it became clear that this wasn't just an accident. When the tower came down, there were probably a couple hundred people who died on the planes and. Some number of additional people who died, you know, in the buildings from the impacts. But yeah, when the towers came down, that's what really the majority, I'd say, of the fatalities happened that day.
Right. So, I mean, I have on my phone, and the reason why I have this on my phone is because I downloaded it from like Napster back in 2002, which it was.
Kids, ask your parents.
Not quite legal. But I still have the file, and it's Howard Stern's broadcast from that day, which, you know, interestingly enough, they don't want anyone to have anymore. And I see the reason why.
It's locked away in the archive.
Yeah. But I have it, so I can listen to it. So I'll report on what I said. So, it's no longer widely available. So first of all, it starts off like every other morning news report. It's like totally normal day. They were talking about totally frivolous stuff. They're talking about, you know, they did a very kind of like mean skit about the kid who was like in, there was a kid who was like supposed to be in Little League who won the championship, but it turned out he was 15, not 12. And, but they did, it was kind of, you wouldn't do that today because they were making fun of his like, Latin, you know, the Hispanic, angle to it. Then the whole hour before was like the fact that they were saying that Howard Stern was at a club once and Pamela Anderson kissed him, but he didn't go further. And they were like giving him crap for that for an hour.
That sounds like classic Howard Stern.
Yeah, yeah. And this was just like the whole story. And they kept just coming back to it. Like they wouldn't let him go off to another story. And he'd be like, no, no, she didn't want it. And they're like, you're a coward. You're a coward. And finally, and they also lamented like, well, now she's going to marry Kid Rock and that's it and blah, blah, blah. But, you know, spoiler alert, that marriage did not work out for very long. although I believe both are alive and well, all of those figures are alive and well in 2021. Especially Kid Rock, he's still doing stuff, right?
I can't say that.
Didn't
I
follow
closely.
Didn't he run for Senate the other, like, or at least he
was doing something in politics.
Yeah.
I don't know if that should be taken with more or less gravitas than when Kanye was running for president.
Right, right. Yeah, but still, like, it's doing something. So eventually, you know, he finally gets them off this topic by saying, I'm sorry to interrupt the fun, but we have a serious news story to cover. And he said, like, a plane crashed into the World Trade Center, and they looked out the window and they could see it. And they're, you know, and they're like, whoa, that's a huge fire. And I've heard, you know, from other people in New York say, you know, they basically just heard an explosion or just saw an explosion or, and they're, you know, despite what you hear from conspiracy theorists, there are videos of that first plane going in. Right.
And New Yorkers, of course, have this reputation for nothing fazes them. So I'm sure, yeah, there were plenty of people who say, I heard an explosion. I just kept walking to work. Yeah, I got right back on the subway. And then everything changed.
Yeah. Yeah. So the thing about the broadcast, though, is it gets increasingly upsetting over time. And I think at one point he says, you know, this is really bad, but then every few minutes it just gets worse, which I thought was really, you know, what it was. And so, you know, you get the second plane and then you get callers calling in or some of his, I think some of them are some of his people who are like increasingly, frantic. And he has to stop a guy from, you know, saying like, you know, go to your 7-Eleven and take him out or something like that. He's like, all right, get this guy off the air. You know, like real, real crazy stuff. But, you know, at one point he's like, you know, we got to go to war. We need to level the entire Middle East and turn it into a parking lot, which is probably the reason why it's not replayed.
Yeah, I'm sure he's not the originator of that sentiment.
That was natural sentiment. It was just like what...
Well, I was going to say, even pre-9/11, there were plenty of people who saw that as the only resolution to the unending conflict in that region. But this would certainly dredge that up in the moment for a lot of folks.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, and then you do see them decide to stay on the air for longer than expected because apparently people liked them on the air. But he's like, I got to be careful here. he did say, I've got to be careful here because I don't want to be the guy to, you know, tell everybody what they should think. Hmm. But he probably a lot of people were, you know, he was kind of a, like shock jock comedian type, but a lot of people took him way too seriously. And I don't know, because maybe it was a time when you didn't have as many, people like that, or maybe that's always true. Like, you know, if there's somebody who's pretty, who's like a comedian and pretty, pretty charismatic, you know, a lot of people will take everything they say seriously. And so that might happen. And I think there are a lot of other media broadcasts that were actually, they did surprisingly well for the media, graded on a curve that day. especially graded on a 2021 curve.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. But yeah, another thing that I remember from that night, Well, okay, so during the day, seeing that first tower fall was kind of the craziest moment. And for me, it was just like, you know, that was like those buildings to me represented New York. And so it was sort of like the death of the entire city in some way. You know, I was like, can't you just like rebuild them? I was kind of like, you know, how, and then the second tower went down, and then it's just like, it's almost like if you have an unexpected death in the family, you don't believe it at first. Mm. So
did you have any thoughts at the time about the plane that hit the Pentagon, or was that very much in second place given the connection to New York?
Very much in second place. Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, it still happened, and then Pennsylvania happened, and then right. They would say, well, we think there might be other planes. There might be like a fifth plane and a sixth plane and a seventh plane. We don't know. And I do remember in the science class, there was, you know, in the broadcast, they said, well, we don't know who this is. You know, Osama bin Laden comes to mind. So apparently the people in the media who are in the know, you know, knew this was going on. And actually, I kind of skipped over this, but the day before, there was a news story that was very much related about General Massoud, who's killed in Afghanistan. And who's that? Well, that was a guy that was one of the political leaders in Afghanistan. He was one of the members of the Northern Alliance. So
opposition to the Taliban.
Opposition to the Taliban. Another one, another guy there is General Dostum. He's still around. He actually escaped into like Uzbekistan or Tajikistan or one of those in the last couple of weeks. And there's like a video of the Taliban in his house, to which I, there's kind of a Twitter thing where it's like, you know, oh, wow, they see how nice his house is. And I'm like, that house is like, take your living room and take all your great-grandmother's furniture and like shove it all in there. That's what it looks like. But anyway, sorry, that's maybe unfair to that style. But so that general, I don't know a whole lot about the politics there, but that general was supporting of the Soviets. Massoud was against the Soviets. So he was with the Mujahideen. So I guess that's why it was an alliance. It was an alliance of people who were opposed in the previous civil war, but now we're together in this civil war.
United in their opposition to the Taliban.
Yeah, I guess so. But, you know, somebody who knows more will tell me. But I still think just by knowing just who the people are, I already know more than like 95% of people. Anyway, so this guy, Massoud, he was killed September 10th. And there is actually a 9/11 New York Times said the day after a suicide bombing aimed at Ahmed Shah Massoud, the leader, by the way, I'm sorry, I don't know if I'm pronouncing this right, the leader of the last remaining opposition to the Taliban. Conflicting reports persisted today over whether he had survived. And so we now know he did not survive. We now think like that was part of the plan, probably all connected. Mm.
Well, so you mentioned that people were speculating that morning that, you know, maybe before any formal responsibility had been taken.
They were
saying, well, you could be Osama bin Laden. Yeah. Presumably, the reason they were saying that was because of his history of previous attempts on the World Trade Center.
Right. Well, no. So his declaration of war against America was 1996. The first World Trade Center bombing was 1993. I was kind of confused by that. So I looked into it. 1993 was a family member of Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, who was, by 2001, working with bin Laden. But it gets confused. But I remember when they captured Khalid Sheikh Mohammed. You almost can't burnish it from your brain like
right,
that.
Yeah. That him in that dirty shirt.
Dirty shirt. Yes.
Another one of those enduring images. Probably more vivid in my mind than anything specific related to Osama bin Laden's killing.
Probably. Yeah.
I'd say that the images surrounding Osama bin Laden come more from, was it O Dark 30, the movie that was made about, finding him and tracking him down and killing him than anything actually released. Because they...
Right.
I don't think they publicly released much from him, information about it, other than we confirmed he's dead, yeah, and we dumped his body in the ocean in a place we're never going to tell you.
Well, I remember whenever they would talk about Bin Laden in the news, they would play a clip of one of his videos where he's like sitting in his cave next to a gun with his finger, like,
yeah,
like, I have things to tell you, but you can't understand a word he's saying. So,
So much analysis has gone into like every little thing in those videos.
I'm sure.
Trying to determine, you know, what kind of signals is he sending? Where might he be? A lot of both open source and you know, government intelligence work on that type of stuff.
There was a why am I now remembering Family Guy? Where you know what I'm talking about?
No.
They have a scene where like they're actually trying to film one of these videos, but he keeps on like laughing or screwing up the words, and then they have to like restart. And, for some reason, I remember that more than the actual Bin Laden.
I know there was a in-depth academic paper on the firearms that appear in Osama Bin Laden videos, and what videos have common elements and what have distinct ones, and what that might be indicative of.
Yeah, yeah. Right, and so yes. So, okay.
Well, so
where are we?
we didn't have this in the notes, but when was the bombing of the USS Cole? That was
earlier that year.
Okay. So that, and I think Bin Laden had taken credit for that. So that may be part of why he was on the short list at that point.
Right, right. They were waging war. Again, that one didn't faze me as much as it should. Like, you know, a US warship was attacked. I mean, think about how crazy that is. But to me, it's just like, yeah, these things happen. I don't know.
Did any Americans die in that attack?
I think so. Yeah, I think like six or seven.
I know it was a big deal, but at the same time, yeah, it was an attack on a military asset, and it kind of felt like, right, well, that's what they're there for, to draw that kind of fire. Very very different than an attack on civilians.
I think it might have been discussed in the presidential campaign. So it might've been in 2000. Mm. I'm not sure. So I have written here, you know, then like looking at it later that night and into the morning, the other images are not just the smoke and the buildings and the people coming out with soot covered. And then the fact that like everybody went to donate blood, but there was no, people didn't need blood.
Right.
Maybe somebody did.
But people were desperate to do something.
Right, right. And then, yeah, but once you start zooming in, because it was all news for the next, I want to say 6 months, but but really for the next week. And I think that's when the news scroll started coming in on the bottom.
Yeah, the Chyron.
Right. That was not there before 9/11. They put that up.
Or if it was only for, you know, dramatic breaking news.
Right. Well, there was so much stuff happening at the same time that you had to keep up on all of it. Yeah. And so
let me pull back to something you mentioned earlier, on the day of, when we didn't know if there were more planes in the air, that, and they did basically ground everyone at some point. I think it was not too far into the day. But I don't know the veracity of this, but, I've read in a couple of places that, there were four planes that they did hijack. There was one there were the two that hit the Twin Towers.
Right.
There's the one that hit the Pentagon. The one that went down in Pennsylvania was supposedly targeting the White House.
Hmm.
They did not hijack a fifth plane. However, supposedly the plans when they were setting up their list of targets, option number five was MIT. Which strikes home for me. Presumably because of MIT's involvement, less so at that point in time, but historically with the military industrial complex. I think that's what kind of put a target on their back. So there was kind of a on the one hand, a kind of a survivor's guilt thing a little bit going on at MIT at the time, but also even
when you were there.
Because I didn't get there until 2002.
Right. It's about a year later.
But yeah, there was a little bit of that survivor's guilt, but also the knowledge that we are very much on the target list, and that when the next attack comes, because there was no reason to believe that we wouldn't see more. Aircraft or other mechanisms that we're on the short list, and the closest thing to happen to Boston in the following on that was the marathon bombing.
Yeah,
but that was a completely different story. And way later.
That would have been very different if it happened in 2005.
Something on the order of a decade later. Yeah. It would have been a very different world if it happened around then.
So I don't know if they would have reacted differently, but it would have seemed much more connected.
I guess, getting a little bit ahead of ourselves here, but
yeah, because I still have stuff from that day and the day after.
One of the things that was very apparent in the ongoing in the aftermath of the marathon bombing was the bringing to bear of the security state and the Patriot Act domestically, which were all things that dramatically grew out of the immediately following 9/11. So we mentioned enemy of the state as kind
right.
of a foreshadowing of that.
Yeah. I think you're right. To come back with what you said, I mean, being at Yale as well, I felt the same way. Like when there was the Yale-Harvard game, there's like a lot of celebrities there. Mm. There's a lot of children of people who are, you know, maybe more important. Well, the president's daughter was in my school. So, it's like, there could be. And even I remember the year after I graduated in 2007, there was some kind of a bomb set off at the law school and people were all freaking out. As I'm going to get into a little bit, we're still on the day after, but this was hanging over our heads for the next 10 years.
There was certainly a sense of a loss of innocence because I'm trying to think of whether it matters whether you couch this as an act of war or not, but when was the last time that America had been attacked on its own soil? There's a couple of very minor things during World War II with Japanese balloon bombs.
There was the whole Pearl Harbor thing.
Well, that wasn't the mainland, though. I mean, I don't know if that's
right.
a worthy distinction, well, but if you go back further than that, I don't know if the Civil War counts. You've got the invasion in 1812 with the War of 1812.
We're already talking like past anyone's lifetime.
Yeah, this is several fourth turnings prior.
Yeah, right, and. There had been terrorist attacks on the country before, but not at that scale,
and not foreign terrorism really. I mean, there was some domestic terrorism, but foreign actors not so much.
Yeah, maybe some of the assassinations had foreign involvement.
And do you count like the Puerto Rican independence movement as a foreign? I guess technically they were a territory at the time, so.
Yeah,
depends how you slice that, but also that a lot of the while the 60s and 70s had lots of bombings and terrorist activity, the majority of those had no or minimal human casualties. Publicity stunt is not the right term for it, but they were making a statement. They weren't trying to rack up a body toll, and certainly Osama bin Laden was trying to make a statement, but he had no interest in avoiding a body toll.
He wanted to create a large body toll, and it was like I felt like we were being hunted down just as people who resided in America, basically. And, he was targeting people who were citizens, non-citizens. He was targeting people of all religions, Jewish, Christian, Muslim, it didn't matter. He's just going to,
Yeah,
blow them away.
I mean, as with all terrorism, it's the indiscriminate nature that amplifies the terror.
Yeah, yeah. So let's see. Yeah, that's jarring. I think that is relevant to the day of, and I just think like one of the things that I remember from the day after. Or that night was when you started to see individual people. Now, a lot of people who were at the site, you know, say how crazy it was. They started hearing thuds and it was bodies hitting the ground. But you really started to get that night, I think, pictures of people jumping out. Now, I remember seared into my brain in the 93 bombing. Is it 93 or 94? I always get that confused. But anyway, of people breaking windows in the World Trade Center, get air. But this was just people jumping out of windows, and it's hard to imagine how bad it must have been in there for people to do that. And then you also learn of the numbers of firemen and police who went into the building to get people out who were just there and, you know, to only to get themselves basically disintegrated.
Yeah, and well, like, it's hard to call it a failure of planning or protocol, but
there was no way to plan for that.
Yeah, there was at least a significant period where people were being told to stay in your offices.
There was
because if you're up 100 something floors, and the elevators are down, then you can't expect all those people to be able to efficiently and effectively evacuate out. And if you think, well, it's just a fire, we've got it under control. And so there was a window where perhaps they could have had evacuated a significant portion of people, but they didn't realize that the clock was ticking on that. And I'm right. Sure there are plenty of people who had serious, you know, guilt and PTSD that they realized they could have taken action, and there's no reason they necessarily would have known it at the time, but that they felt that there are things we could have done that we didn't, and that they feel that they failed those people.
I mean, I'd imagine, so if there's like a fire alarm, like I just run right out. So I'd always imagine I'd be like, you know, the one of the few people from a high floor out, but then you'd have a survivor.
Yeah, well, and there are
because I heard that there were announcements saying get out, don't get out. They didn't know what to announce. Yeah, but the one thing I wanted to and the firemen were coming up, and were they saying stay? Were they saying go? We don't know necessarily, but it must have been crazy for them that day, because it's like I always think about it this way. Like, it's one way to say I'm going to be a fireman. I'm going to be the one who's going to put my life on the line for other people. Like, that sounds very noble, and that sounds like a good thing to do. It's another thing to wake up one morning and you have a family and whatever saying and find out, yeah, today is the day. And they did that.
Yeah. Well, and
that's why they were considered heroes for.
And it wasn't just the New York City Fire Department, because I think even in the short amount of time that it took for the towers to come down, I think they'd already activated mutual aid from all over the greater metropolitan area. So you had, I'm almost certain that they had folks coming in from Long Island and New Jersey and Westchester County and possibly even from Connecticut. And those folks certainly came in the aftermath to help with searching through the rubble and that kind of stuff. And
I remember hearing, like, you could see this from space. You could see this from Connecticut, maybe parts of Connecticut. And it's like smoke in the background. So it was enormous. And yeah, I'm pretty sure emergency for 100 miles were being tagged, at least also to cover the people going in, because now you have, you know, emergency workers from all over the city coming in.
Right. Yeah.
And you have a lot of areas.
People don't stop having heart attacks because there's a terrorist attack in downtown.
Yeah.
You still got to deal with everything else going on in the city.
One thing, you know, during the pandemic that was true as well. So that night they had like 10,000 missing people. I think it was down to 6,000. So I think for a few weeks we thought it was 6,000 dead. Ended up being under 3,000. I know that night we got a call. It turned out that my dad's friend was missing and was in the building. So, you know, we knew what that meant. I remember seeing on TV, like, a lot of people who, like, they basically aired these people who, you know, were showing pictures of their relatives, like they're missing. Have you seen them? And it's kind of like hard to watch because, like, you know, they're all dead. Almost all. I mean, there was actually a small group of people that were recovered from an air pocket, which is actually a pretty crazy story. They were on the stairs and the building, the entire building crashed above them, but they were safe in the stairs. And from what I heard, like the noise was, incredible. And
I can't even imagine.
Yeah. And they said like, they thought they were dead. But they weren't even touched, crazily enough. And there are also all these rumors, you know, going around, oh, there's one guy who wrote it down and was fine and, you know, stuff like that, which, probably come up a lot when these sort of things happen. Then it got revised, right. The casualty rate got revised down to under 3,000. The next day, now, I remember going to school the next day and getting back to work. I don't know about you.
I must have, yeah.
Okay, because Foursquare gives us the day off when they're like, oh, people are really upset about Trump, so take the day off. I've had that, which I don't know. I feel like people are so like, oh, we need a mental health day. It wasn't.
I mean, if we hadn't gone in, what would we have done?
Honestly, I feel like in that situation, it was better for mental health to just get back to work and be together, which is scary because that's what people have been avoiding for the last 2 years. I remember going to get a car. We got like a Pathfinder later that afternoon. I remember like school ended at like 2:10, so we could like do things afterwards. Parents get a car, and on the TV there, that's when the World Trade Center 7 was collapsing. So that was a building about half as tall as the World Trade Center that had been badly damaged and collapsed from all the debris and wreckage. Then there was a fire ongoing for a long time, for like 100 days until December.
Yeah, that's kind of mind-boggling that the pit was still smoldering for so long.
Yeah. So I went with my family to New York the next month in October 2001. And so, you know, we got into a cab. I got to have a cab with my dad, take us to Ground Zero. So it was called Ground Zero back then. It's not called Ground Zero anymore, but it was probably called Ground Zero for about 10 years.
Yeah.
I don't know. Maybe by the time I moved there in 2006. No, it was still called Ground Zero, I think. Now, not really. And so we can get pretty close. I remember there were people selling like little trinkets of the World Trade Center, and people were like offended by that. That almost seems like such a small issue now that,
On the one hand, I can, it kind of feels like how you, I don't know if you still can, but you used to be able to get like a chunk of the Berlin Wall.
Oh, it's not actually, it's like little, like you can get tiny Statue of Liberty.
Oh, I see. Okay.
It was like tiny. Yeah. It wasn't like chunks of the wreckage.
So little tchotchke World Trade Centers.
Exactly.
They were intact, right? It wasn't like a collapsing.
No. They were intact. They're probably mass produced before.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
Thing. You could probably still buy them down there now. So there was that. And I remember seeing like in the distance, like there's, I don't know if it's a famous image, but like you can see like the shell of one of the, out of the outside of the building, it's like all like jaggedy, but it's still like reaching up in the air, like 10 or 11 stories. So I remember seeing that. And I don't know, I remember getting like this cough for the next like few weeks. So that could have been from something else, but I don't know. Let's see, what else do I have here? There's actually an interesting, speaking of Trump, there was a Trump Tower down there. There's actually an interesting video of him calling into an early morning show on 9/11, talking about basically more from like the builder's perspective. But he definitely did give this like, you know, my building was second highest and then that went up and now my building is first highest again. All this time we haven't even mentioned like the president, which I guess that was the Trump before there was a Trump. It was Bush. But I don't, so it's amazing now when I talk about it, like the president's almost a second thought, like, like it's, I guess when you're going through it, it's almost a first thought. I remember his first couple of speeches were pretty bad, but then he got better over the next few weeks.
Well, the one that everyone remembers is him at Ground Zero with the bullhorn.
Yeah. That
certainly made an impression. And
that pumped people up. But I also remember at the beginning when they first put the microphones in front of him, right when he was probably outside that school that he was just giving. Mm-hmm. He's like, yeah, we're going to get these folks. And people are like, these folks. So.
Well, yeah, and I believe I didn't go back and look at the speeches, but I believe he did make some comments not too long after, making it clear that, you know, there's a very specific group that we're going to go after who's responsible for this. This isn't right. about going after all Muslims or all Middle Easterners, and
that was very important.
Yeah, because like you said, there could have very easily been, and there was some, deranged is perhaps too strong a term, but some of those callers calling into Howard Stern, there were certainly people who were very ready to jump to the conclusion and seek out people to pin this on and not just verbally abuse them.
I mean, I've heard people say things about about Muslims and Arabs in New York that were not good. But I think overall, and I'm going to get more into this, that there were some incidents that I witnessed that were not so great. But I think in the big picture, Americans actually held it together pretty well on that. There weren't there wasn't any incidents of real violence. I mean, maybe you could come up with one.
Yeah.
There was some like nasty shouting in the street and stuff like that.
As much as people have commented on the global war on terror and said that, America was, the military went to war and America went to the mall, or that the public wasn't really engaged with it. I'd say that immediately following 9/11, the whole nation was on a war footing. That we were united, together. That there was this drive to support each other, not necessarily in a let's go get those guys, but in the sense that we need to be stronger together because of this.
Yeah, because I remember people actually expressing a variety of different opinions, but it was all there was still like a lot more patriot. It was always like, they all seemed in the spirit of patriotism. Whether you were anti-war or, whether you agreed with this or that policy. I remember everyone was kind of being like, now's the time to be patriotic. Hmm. And what was I trying to remember? One of the things about Bush's speech, though, was that comes back to the Taliban, is that he said, we are going to go after Al-Qaeda, but we're not going to we're not going to distinguish between Al-Qaeda and the terrorists and those who harbor them. So that was that was the Taliban, because the Taliban had kept them basically as they harbored them, just like he said. That wasn't a lie. It's sort of interesting I don't want to get into this, but like, how does that change over the course of 20 years? Was that really the wrong thing to say from the beginning? Was that something we could have shifted on at some point in the future if we're like, well, we don't want to rebuild Afghanistan? I don't know these questions, but it brings up a lot of interesting questions.
Yeah. Well, and leaving the Iraq aspect of the wars that followed this out of it for a moment. I think there was a pretty strong consensus that action needed to be taken. There was not a turn the other cheek option really on the table, following something of this magnitude.
Yeah.
There may have been some airstrikes following the attack on the USS Cole. But it was proportional, if not less than that, to the degree of the damage inflicted on us. And a restrained proportional response was, well, you could say it was not an option on the table here, but I think maybe the issue was that a threshold had been crossed such that even a proportional response was going to be massive in scale.
Yeah, yeah. The idea that you're just going to do very little or nothing was not going to happen. Although I did run into a lot of people who were like anti-war at the time. I even think like a lot of teachers said things that were anti-war, but it was a much more respectful thing than the way people talk now, if that makes sense.
Much like when you said that people were rushing to give blood, even though they didn't need blood.
Yeah.
My understanding is there was a huge influx of people volunteering for the armed services that they felt they need to step up and do their part. This was before, you know, the authorization for use of military force and before we declared, that we were going into Afghanistan with the coalition.
Right. And this all happened very fast, by the way.
Yeah.
Because there
are a lot of people who have stories of going on, you know, September 12th or the week following to recruiting stations and saying, you know, sign me up. I want to do my part.
Yeah, because the Taliban fell by the end of the year. It's already September here. And that was, well, I think there was like a month where nothing happened and everybody's really on edge. Mm. And then something happened. And then it was very easy to basically remove the Taliban to the fringes and, you know, basically get their last stronghold at Tora Bora, wherever that is. But then it was like, you know, Osama bin Laden goes across the border and then we stopped hearing about it for a while.
Well, it certainly entered into a different phase of the war.
Yeah. Okay, so let's talk about what the rest of the year was like at school. So that definitely, like, the culture change was more somber. I felt like people actually were nicer to each other. I don't know if you experienced the same thing, but there definitely was, especially like in the first few weeks, it was a lot
you could easily see how a stressful event like that could cause people to tear apart at the seams and lash out at each other. And that is not what happened.
Right. Right. It could be what had happened today. Hmm. Unfortunately. So we did it in my senior year, just in talking about my life. I don't know if this is relevant. It's going to be a little bit relevant. So we did the Crucible. We had that. Then things changed a little bit in 2002 because then we did Sugar, Some Like It Hot. And I basically had to dress up like a woman the whole time in front of the entire high school. And so that was a little bit less dark and depressing than the Crucible, even if I was the one who was kind of suffering, but also, providing comic relief to other people. And then we came out with the Dictator of Easton movie, which has very bad production value, and my storytelling isn't so great, but some of the ideas in there do hold up after 20 years. So we're going to have to replay that. How would you explain to the audience what that was? And what's its relation to 9/11, if any?
Yikes. So many things to unpack there. I'm not even sure which thread to pull.
we'll give it a try because I'm at a loss for words.
There was an analysis of power structures and
censorship. No, but what is it? What is it?
I guess the simple plot device is there's Easton and Weston, and for some reason we had Easton being taken over by a dictator who then
they're the terrorists
needs to invade Weston and annex it.
Yeah. We never came up with a good backstory for that. I feel like that should be filled in.
Yeah, I feel like the narration had some sort of explanation, but I don't know that it held much water.
I feel like your character, the narrator, was kind of more of a propagandist for Weston than anything else. I mean, the dictator isn't still evil, but, you know, I feel like the more of the story needed to be told. But anyway, we could get back into that another time.
Are you suggesting that we should have made equal time for a dictator apologist to present their
no.
side of the story?
No, not at all. Not at all. Although we did apply, I mean, most of the scenes, like the dictator got the most air time in the show.
He is the titular character of the series.
So, right. But so I think a lot of the ideas in there, you're right, you had censorship. Did we have censorship? I think we did.
We definitely had a book burning.
We had a book burning, and we also had like a lot of ideas in terms of, you know, division and what.
Corruption we'll have, in politics.
Yeah. Yes. So we'll have to get into that and actually see what we said. Or I mean, I'm not gonna have you take credit for stuff that we, you know, like, because I obviously, you know, edited it together. But I think you wrote parts of it. So we'll see.
I certainly had a hand in that.
Yeah. So we'll see what happens when in the 20th anniversary of that, which comes up. You know, that was 2002, so that comes up a little later. Okay, and you also wrote here we had a senior trip, a Harbor cruise around New York City. I remember that.
Yeah, so I mean, was it like the night before graduation that we did that?
No, the night after. Maybe.
Was it the night after? So they, you know, we all drove down into the city, and I think we do something at like an arcade, and
we went to Chelsea Pier.
That's right, and it ended with us doing this. You know, harbor cruise around
like
Manhattan.
1 a.m.
Yeah.
And it was cool to see like all the teachers there, like just hanging out, having a sip in the champagne at 1 a.m.
And it was, you know, a fun, lighthearted experience, until we like came around a bend of the island and we saw the Pillars of Light.
Yeah. And the Statue of Liberty was there too, because it's kind of it's all downtown.
And so this was, I assume they did it with lots of searchlights, but it was two vertical beams of light coming up from what appeared to be the ground zero, commemorating the loss of the towers. And it was a little bit of a surreal moment to go from, you know, kind of partying away, having finished high school, to cruising past that quietly in the night.
You know, I remember, so a couple things I remember that trip. Well, a few thoughts. I'm trying to think which one to go first. But let's talk about the light, because they do that now in September every year in New York. And this is the first year where I'm not going to be there to see it, unless I take a little trip down there when I'm in Connecticut. I don't think I'm going to, though. That's kind of saying something, that I'm not going to be there this year. It's sort of like an end of an era for me, but they do that every year. And I've gotten up close to it. It's actually not on the site. It's in the garage. It's in a garage a few blocks down. That was the first time. So that was really crazy. You could see like all my Foursquare check-ins in September. Like you'll see them, cause you can see them from Brooklyn.
Yeah.
And, I would see them from Brooklyn. I would see them from the East Village. Another thing I remember about that trip, well, two things. First of all, you mentioned Mr. Sedoli before. I remember him actually giving us the history of the Brooklyn Bridge as we were going under it. And that's actually a lot of really interesting history.
I read a great book on that earlier this year.
Yeah, time. Yeah. There was a good podcast on it, on history that doesn't suck. Maybe I'll post that. And then I just remember, like, you know, passing the Statue of Liberty and thinking, like, there's no guarantee that will be there in the near future. You know, and I would just think that about all sorts of things. Yeah, like,
was safe. There was a sense of everything could come crashing down around us again at any moment.
Exactly. So 20 years later, the Statue of Liberty is still here, but it's like, it felt like if I had to guess then, I'd be like, maybe not.
Fun Statue of Liberty story.
So I
may need to be fact-checked on this, but I believe I read not too long ago that the reason they stopped allowing people to go up into the torch was because I think it was during World War II, some German saboteurs had set off some explosives, which had weakened the arm. So it wasn't just, you know, things decaying or not being safe. It was actually the victim of a potential terrorist attack.
Hmm.
So I may need to fact check that in the show notes, but yeah, everything old is new again.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me see what else I have written down here on aftermath. I actually remember having like a discussion at my synagogue later because it was Rosh Hashanah, which is actually
high holidays.
Yeah. Which is actually tomorrow. It's actually going to be the day this comes out. But I remember there was a lot of concern about, you know, anti-Muslim sentiment that would happen in the country. And it wasn't, I don't think you'd be able to have an adult conversation about this kind of thing today with like critical race theory and stuff. It was like thinking about it then, it was like, oh wow, there was actually an adult conversation about that. And a few years later, I did witness an incident at Yale, and it's only funny because it's kind of horrible, but it's also the kicker at the end is kind of funny because there was like a drunk guy who saw some people with turbans and he was like, you know, get out of here, you effing terrorists. This is like right in the quad in Yale. And then those guys are people like, F you. And like, they were actually like Sikh Indians. So
yeah, there have been a number of stories of Sikhs being targeted with people assuming that they're Muslims.
Yeah. But, you know, this happened on an Ivy League campus. So I just, you don't understand, although like, you know, dumb college drunk people could probably do just about anything. And, you know, they wouldn't, I don't know. They wouldn't think twice. People have problems. I don't know what to say. So let's compare last episode. We talked about the news stories before. Let's talk about the news stories after. I have a few. Do you remember the anthrax scare?
Yep.
Okay. There was white powder coming in the mail and you're all going to die. Then you had the Capitol sniper, which almost seemed like it was related, but it wasn't. It was just...
It's hard to believe that was in the same same time window.
Almost exactly the same time window where you had some people just picking people off at gas stations in D.C. Imagine how scary that would be to go to a gas station. I know I'd be. I would think twice. And then over the next few years, you had planes going into buildings. There was one plane that crashed into a building on the east side in New York City. It was like a small plane. That was like an accident. And then there was another plane that was flying low that I think that I had already moved in there. That like people were freaking out. People were like, don't do that. Don't fly low. For some reason that they don't like that. So there's all sorts of things for that. And as I said, long-term, this is probably hanging over our year. I started out talking about the capture of Osama bin Laden. I would say this is hanging over our heads and at the top of mind probably until that moment, possibly.
Yeah, I mean, there was infamously the mission accomplished moment, but I think when that happened, it was pretty clear that wasn't, we hadn't really cleared the debt that didn't make things back to normal.
But I'm thinking more like that was Iraq, and also like I'm talking about, you know, you're getting up in the morning and watching the news thinking like, okay, there could be a terrorist attack today. You know, and maybe in the future there will be one, but it'll take us by surprise again. Okay. I have some things listed here about the perpetrators and their motives. I kind of want to go by this quickly, but you know, we talked about Osama bin Laden, Khalid Sheikh Mohammed, basically. There's a lot of problems with the word terrorist. It's very hard to define what a terrorist is. But if you were to construct a belief system that you'd say this is a terrorist belief system, you'd almost have to find what these guys were saying. They're just like, we're going to target civilians and we're going to try to take out as many of them to try to make our point, which if you've listened to them, like it's a very muddled point, as you know, probably many of these organizations have, like all of his speeches and stuff. It's not like he has one thing. He has like all these grievances that kind of add up to, you know, just it's yeah, this it, and this and this and this and this.
They definitely go with the laundry list approach, that there may be some valid concerns in there, but they throw everything at the wall.
Right, right. Exactly. So, okay, what are some related stories in the aftermath? I don't know if you have anything more to say about that. I don't want to dive too deep into it.
Yeah, let's move on from that, because I'm sure okay. there'll be plenty of discussion in other venues of
yeah
all those particular details.
Okay, so actually my related stories in the aftermath, I mean, except for a few of them, a lot of them are positive, believe it or not, because they're all about what it was like moving into New York. But before we have that, this is actually positive. Planes were grounded that day. Some planes ended up never making it to their destination. Tons of planes had to land. They were kind of on their way from the US to Europe, and they had to land in Newfoundland. And so this one town in Newfoundland, Canada, had to host like thousands and thousands of Americans whose plane was grounded in their tiny airfield. And there's a musical about that called Come From Away, which I found to be very, I didn't see the musical, but I found that fact to be very interesting.
Yeah, there was a lot of people who weren't, you know, who weren't in New York, but still got caught up in the ripple effect of stuff that day. Because yeah, like you said, they once they realized what was actually happening, they grounded all flights in the continental U.S.
This is why I still get like a slight thought, like when I'm on a plane, that like when there's an announcement, and maybe this is a problem that I have, but I always feel like there's going to be like, you know. Things have really gone downhill back on the surface. We're going to have to do something. You know what I mean? Like something bad is, I always think not something's wrong with the plane, but something bad happened outside the plane. I don't know why that is. Maybe that's from this. Mm. Okay. The fires were extinguished December 19th. You had some failed, terrorist attacks afterwards. December 22nd, 2001, you had that shoe bomber. And that's the reason why we always have to take off our shoes unless you have TSA PreCheck, which I have.
Richard Reed?
Yeah. Unless you have TSA PreCheck, which I have, so I don't have to take off my shoes, which is good. And that was followed 8 years later in 2009 with the underwear bomber. And I remember after that, there were like, oh, really? but no, we don't have to take off our underwear. But they both failed. They were trying to set off bombs.
I don't remember the details of the specific incident, but I vaguely recollect that there was some attempt made where they were mixing together a number of liquids, and so that's part of why you've got the what is it the 3 ounce limit on.
Yeah, you can't bring your coffee in there. You used to pre 9/11, you could just walk in with a coffee or something, or whatever, you know, big Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know if Dunkin' Donuts had their. I think they did. Yeah. Yeah. So, but I think it's very hard to pull off something quite like this anymore, especially you can't do it the same way. You know, don't allow box cutters on planes. Don't allow.
Well, yeah, that,
and mean, people
that was,
are aware
that
of
was
it.
The other thing was
just people being aware of
they,
it.
They didn't have guns. There weren't actually any bombs. It was the novelty of the approach that made it feasible for them to pull that off. And we could go on a long time about the effectiveness or lack thereof of the TSA,
sure,
and what can reliably slip through their system. But I think the bigger change are some of the systemic things, like the fact that cockpit doors are now by regulation are locked and armored, that the protocol for dealing with hijackings is different. And in a post flight 93 world, that the passengers do not have much tolerance for just sitting back and trusting that things are going to work out okay.
Well, if you think about it, they couldn't even pull it off a fourth time in that day because the passengers in flight 93 fought back. There was a very interesting documentary I saw last year where they treated it as like the battle of flight 93, like the first battle of the war on terror, where like, you know, American civilians overpowered, you know, the terrorist on flight 93 or Al Qaeda on the flight 93, and it's a very interesting way to put it, like a battle in the air among through the aisles or whatever. But and I actually think the most powerful documentary that I've seen that I have not been able to find, again, because it was on TV like 10 years ago, was when they did 9/11 through home videos. Mm-hmm. And it was all people on their camcorders from apartment windows or from the streets seeing it and reacting to it for the first time. I think that was the most powerful one I've seen, and I have not been able to find any evidence of that documentary, but I know it must exist. Okay, so one story that comes out of this is the story of New York City and the rebuilding of New York City, because surprisingly enough, this did not, this was not, did not end up being a permanent blow to New York City. I moved downtown, not far from the World Trade Center in 2006, and you were kind of like a pioneer, and it was like, okay, crime is down across the city, and now they're turning a lot of these office buildings near Wall Street to residential, because you don't, in digital worlds, you don't need as many people working near Wall Street. And there's a lot of security, so if you want security, there's a lot of security down there, and buildings were going back up, and they really redeveloped
Was part of that move or the decrease in demand for office space in that area, was that also an outgrowth of 9/11?
So the story I'm
sure that there were a number of folks who had previously been in the towers or in the immediate area who had to relocate.
Yeah.
You know, in the short term, but did a lot of them not come back, or?
I feel like it was, it seemed like it was actually more of a, this is the story I got. I'm sure you could get like economists and stuff, but the story I got was it was actually more of a market changeover, where in 2006 now, you don't need as many people physically close to Wall Street. And that's like, you know, you could have them in New Jersey or whatever. And so you don't, you know, in the post-internet world, broadband internet, you don't need that. You don't need people right next to the trading floor.
I don't know enough about the history of the hedge funds to gauge whether the ubiquitous Connecticut hedge funds are from a post 9/11 era, or if they were already around prior to that, because I could imagine that a lot of those folks would have previously been in the city.
Yeah, but they weren't necessarily hedge funds there. They were a lot of traders,
right.
Which, yeah, is a little different. And also people who were there,
maybe
like
some cross pollination, but
people who they were like supporting the trading floor and all that, it doesn't exist anymore. Or Wall Street exists, like the stock exchange exists, but
it's, yeah,
it's not as many people.
Very different beast.
Interestingly enough, there's a building nearby, a very old building that has marks on the side from a terrorist attack that happened on Wall Street in 1920. Killed 33 people, and you could still see the, it would be like if they damaged the World Trade Center and they just left it. Hmm. And so that building is still there. That was by like an anarchist, kind of a terrorist from, I think it was like a European kind of, guy, in 1930. And I remember the reaction to that one's very different. That's a very interesting historical thing, because it was like, they were back to work the next day. Okay. So rebuilding downtown Manhattan, that was something we made progress on. Now it was, so the cleanup ended in May 2002. I think bodies were found for years later. There was a little ceremony for it. In later on in 2002, World Trade Center 7 started going up, and they decided to build the same building a little higher. That was actually recommended for the Twin Towers. Just rebuild the Twin Towers
same
as
design.
Was a little higher. There was also one thing going around online where it was like, these email lists that you're on where they would give you like, five, they like rebuilt, they photoshopped in like five Twin Towers where you're like giving the finger and it's like, come and get it, terrorist.
I remember seeing that one.
Yeah. And,
because there was a lot of, debate and discussion about what the design for the rebuilt towers should be. That went on for, I feel like, for years.
Yes. Yes. So, they rebuilt 7 pretty quickly because it's one site across the street, and, how do I be nice about this? Nobody really cares about World Trade Center 7. So, but it's a nice building. I've been in there. The Machine Learning Symposium was in there. So when I moved in 2006, they decided to use World Trade Center 7, newly reopened, to unveil the plans for the World Trade Center site. And I was like, this is cool. I'm going to go to this. And so I went to this. I went to a floor of the World Trade Center 7. The whole floor is open. They didn't even have the walls yet with the different offices. Like, you can see the whole floor. And they had their whole plan there.
Not that that was the plan design, just they hadn't finished building it out? Or
They hadn't put the walls and the dividers. So it was like the entire floor was like one giant office. Whereas, you know, even if you want big open space, you might want a section for like a auditorium and a section for like, yeah. So these are big buildings. And so in this design, you had World Trade Center, which at the time was called the Freedom Tower, still called the Freedom Tower sometimes. That's a big one that went up. But then also World Trade Centers 2, 3, 4, and 5, not as tall, but they're going to be very tall buildings as well, kind of like World Trade Center 7, and maybe even taller between 7 and 1. So World Trade is taller than the Twin Towers were, and then those other 4 or 5 or whatever are close. They were also deconstructing the Deutsche Bank building, which had been damaged too much to be functional. They were still deconstructing that when I was there, and there were like some fires there from time to time, because I don't know why fires would start, but like things were all messed up inside there, maybe, you know. And so it was kind of like dangerous to be there when they were demolishing it. I forgot about, in terms of planes into building, I forgot about there was a plane into an IRS office in 2010. Okay, we'll skip that. Let's talk about the rebuilding. Oh yeah, and the Times Square attempt also in 2010. Huh, 2010, two things that year. Wasn't successful. Okay, so World Trade Center starts getting built in 2006. People are very upset about the delays. It's actually called Pataki's Pit at one point by the media, because the Port Authority seems to be delaying the rebuilding of it, and that's controlled by the state government. Pataki was the governor at the time. The museum pools open in 2011. So those are the footprints of the building. Those are now pools of waterfalls going down. And it's actually kind of nice because you smell, you know, you're in New York City, but there you just smell water, like fresh water, which is kind of nice. And the names of people, the names of the victims are all around the pools, and people leave like flags there, and you know, there'll be a ceremony there in a few days. And then the museum opens in May of 2014. I was actually in that museum. That first couple weeks, it was only like families of first responders were allowed in. But for some reason, I was there. Somebody got a ticket. I don't know why. But anyway, I was there the first week, and it was like, no, you know what? I think it was like 3 a.m. So it must have been a situation where, like, you can go at 3 a.m. if you want. But a very powerful museum. I recommend people go there. A lot of stuff about the construction of these buildings and some of the artifacts that were found. Even when building the new World Trade, they found artifacts from things that existed there before the original World Trade Center. And then later that year in 2014, first tower went up. And then in 2016, the Oculus opened up, which was the new, which is right next door. That's the new train station. It's actually pretty nice. Very high-end stores in there. There's an Apple store. There's a Casper mattress. There's a, you can go to New Jersey if you want for some reason. I have actually went to New Jersey a few times. I don't know what I was thinking, but I did it. So that's sort of when you feel like it's complete. But that site is really came back and was developed quite a bit. And it's actually like, you know, way better than it was. And there's actually ongoing development in there because there's still two towers waiting to be built. Tower 2. Now, 3 and 4 are already up. So you have already a lot of big buildings there. Tower 2 is on its way. Tower 5 is planned. So it's still ongoing in development, but really over the next few years, that neighborhood came back in the city. And the city was kind of in the middle of a golden age at that point, which sadly has ended in the last few years. But New York City really felt like, you know, the most resilient place in the world after that happened.
Yeah, there was it certainly bolstered that reputation, that attitude that New Yorkers can handle anything, and perhaps deservedly so.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, without getting into what's going on now, but
well.
Yeah, but you know, it's it really felt like, you know, it really felt good to like live down there, and then later on to like, you know, spend time down there and like do things down there, even with the history, and then you learn like the history down there is way more varied. Like a lot of American history took place in that general area. So you're right. We should have ended with you talking about the resiliency of New York City. And I think I would like to end there. This has been a tough episode. I feel like my voice is getting a little bit raspy right now. I don't know about you, but I feel like we should close up.
It's a heavy one. We're wearing ourselves out a little bit, but
all right.
There were a lot of things that needed to be said.
All right. Yeah. Well, I mean, yeah. Yeah, there are things that I wanted to say. So, okay, I think we're about to wrap it up. Is there anything I missed that needs to be said, or are we good?
Nothing I can think of. Yeah, I mean, it still feels like it's a little bit difficult to convey how different the world felt afterward.
I remember walking by last year or the year before, being like when the museum first opened, I was like, this is something that happened recently. And now I'm walking by being like, no, this is like ancient history now. And
yeah,
it was kind of strange.
We've now been, you know, more of our life has been lived after than before.
That's a scary thought.
and you know, like I said previously, for our generation, this was the equivalent of, the Kennedy assassination. It's one of those moments that you remember where you were and everything changed. You know, maybe another parallel moment to that would be like the moon landing, but that was you know a celebratory moment.
Maybe Pearl Harbor.
Yeah, if you go back another generation before that.
Yeah. All right, I'm gonna wrap it up here. I don't know exactly how to wrap this up, but I feel like I've said everything that needs to be said.
Yeah, I mean, I guess just remember that it's not all facts and figures and timelines, that the real people live that experience, and
yeah, I mean,
it shaped us,
and I think we, if I may say so, I think we did a good job of kind of combining historical facts with personal experience, and I hope that people got a lot of value out of that. So, all right. That does it for today, this monster two-parter. Have a great week, everyone. That's the show. To support The Local Maximum, sign up for exclusive content and our online community at maximum.locals.com. The Local Maximum is available wherever podcasts are found. If you want to keep up, remember to subscribe on your podcast app. Also, check out the website with show notes and additional materials at localmaxradio.com. If you want to contact me, the host, send an email to localmaxradio@gmail.com. Have a great week. Feel the power.